Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Our top story: rare earths, soybeans, fentanyl, a breakdown on agreements made during President Trump's meeting with Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping, and issues left out of the conversation.
I'll be going to China in April.
President Trump orders the U.S. military to resume nuclear weapons testing immediately, the first such move in more than 30 years, citing China and Russia's weapons race.
When I see them testing, I say, well, they're going to test, I guess we have to test. Russia's second and China's third, and China will catch up within 4 or 5 years.
Trump says he will announce the test sites later. More questions than answers after the high-stakes meeting between President Trump and Xi Jinping. Former professor at Peking University's HSBC School of Business, Christopher Balding, unpacks the economic angles of the talks. And retired Brigadier General and former U.S. Defense Attaché in Beijing, David Stilwell, joins us to unpack how the U.S. and China cover the talks and what that signals to each side. Before we dive into today's news, don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter using the link down below. In tomorrow's newsletter, we're shining a spotlight on President Trump's high-stakes meeting with CCP leader Xi Jinping, on top of some key developments this week. It drops Friday morning straight to your inbox. Don't miss it. President Trump on his way back to Washington after a week of diplomacy and deals in Asia. The president ended his tour in South Korea with a high-stakes meeting with Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping. Following that meeting, Trump said China will buy what he calls tremendous amounts of American soybeans. He also said the U.S. will reduce fentanyl-linked tariffs on China while Beijing pauses its planned rare earth export controls. NTD's Washington correspondent Mar Otsu brings us more from that meeting from Jeonju, South Korea.
He's going to be very strong in enforcing the fentanyl, everything having to do with fentanyl and regulations internally, including taking very strong measures against those that don't obey.
President Trump is rolling back fentanyl-related tariffs on China as he leaves his first face-to-face meeting in 6 years with CCP leader Xi Jinping.
It was 57, now it's 47. Because I believe they are really taking strong action.
Effective immediately, the 20% U.S. tariff on Chinese imports, imposed due to Beijing's failure to curb exports of fentanyl ingredients, is now reduced to 10%. And on talking China into buying more U.S. agriculture.
Large amounts, tremendous amounts of the soybeans and other farm products are going to be purchased immediately, starting immediately.
President Trump saying that she authorized China to start buying U.S. soybeans just before their meeting.
I appreciate it. That was a very nice gesture.
Meanwhile, President Trump declares the dispute with China over rare earths settled.
But all of the rare earth has been settled, and that's for the world. I guess you could really say this was a worldwide situation, not just the U.S. situation.
China, which has a near monopoly on rare earths, elements that play vital roles in cars, planes, and weapons, ramped up their export restrictions on these critical minerals earlier this month. In response, President Trump signed a flurry of deals with Indo-Pacific countries, including Japan, Malaysia, and Australia, to counter Beijing's market dominance. But after his meeting with Xi,
well, there's no roadblock at all on rare earth. That will hopefully disappear from our vocabulary for a little while.
The president says that this is part of a one-year agreement that will be negotiated every year. And minutes before his meeting with the Chinese regime leader, President Trump announces that he's directed the Department of War to immediately start testing the United States' nuclear weapons on a, quote, equal basis with other countries, specifically citing China and Russia.
They seem to all be nuclear testing. We have more nuclear weapons than anybody. We don't do testing. We've halted it many years ago, but with others doing testing, I think it's appropriate that we do also.
President Trump also announces that China will begin to purchase American energy, even teasing what he calls a very large-scale transaction of oil and gas from Alaska. He also says that he has plans to visit China in April, after which Xi Jinping will come to visit the U.S. Reporting from Gyeongju, South Korea, Mar Otsu, NTD News.
President Trump said he will visit China next April.
I'll be going to China in April, and he'll be coming here sometime after that, whether it's in Florida, Palm Beach, or Washington, D.C.
Trump said they didn't talk about China's purchase of Russian oil, but they talked about efforts to end the war in Ukraine.
didn't really discuss the oil. We discussed working together to see if we could get that war finished.
On the tech side, Trump said he and Xi talked about NVIDIA's access to China in general, but they didn't talk about allowing NVIDIA to export its most powerful AI chips, Blackwell, to China. Trump said Beijing will talk to NVIDIA about taking their chips. China has discouraged domestic firms from using NVIDIA's H20 AI chips. That's a less powerful version specifically made for the Chinese market. There have been concerns that allowing China access to NVIDIA's advanced chips would boost its military. In April, Washington wanted to ban NVIDIA from selling H20 chips to China over such concerns. But Trump later reversed course and said those chips can be sold to China if the U.S. government takes a cut from the revenue. Worth noting, reporting from the regime's official mouthpiece, Xinhua made no mention of China's promises of easing rare earth export controls, buying U.S. soybeans and energy, as well as cracking down on fentanyl. Xinhua's readout cited Xi saying that the two countries have a bright future in cooperating in these areas, cracking down on illegal immigration, telecom fraud, anti-money laundering, artificial intelligence, as well as preventing infectious disease. China's major stock market index plunged between 0.7 to 1% following the Trump-Xi meeting Thursday. A bombshell from President Trump before his meeting with Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping: the U.S. will resume nuclear weapons testing. That decision ends a 30-year voluntary halt on nuclear tests. The last U.S. test of this kind was in 1992, declared by then-President George H.W. Bush as the Cold War came to a close. Here's more.
President Donald Trump has ordered the U.S. military to resume nuclear weapons testing.
We have more nuclear weapons than anybody. We don't do testing. You know, we've halted it years, many years ago. But with others doing testing, I think it's appropriate that we do also.
It wasn't immediately clear if he was referring to actual detonation of a weapon, something the U.S. hasn't done in 33 years, or merely the testing of nuclear-capable missiles. The announcement came just minutes before Trump was set to meet Chinese President Xi Jinping in South Korea for trade talks. Trump posted the directive on Truth Social, saying the Pentagon will begin testing America's nuclear arsenal on an equal basis with other nuclear powers. He said he had to act to ensure Washington keeps up with rival powers, adding that test site locations would be decided later. Asked whether the world now faced a higher risk of nuclear war, Trump dismissed the danger, saying U.S. weapon stockpiles were well locked up. He added that he would welcome denuclearization. Trump's call to restart testing comes as China rapidly expands its arsenal, and just days after Russia claimed successful tests of a nuclear-powered cruise missile and torpedo. The U.S. leader has criticized Russian President Vladimir Putin, saying he should focus on ending the war in Ukraine instead of launching missiles. According to Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies, China has roughly doubled the size of its arsenal to an estimated 600 nuclear weapons in 2025 from 300 weapons in 2020. The Arms Control Association says the United States has a stockpile of 5,225 nuclear warheads and Russia has 5,580. Meanwhile, Trump has given South Korea approval to build a nuclear-powered submarine, effectively admitting Seoul to a small club of nations possessing such vessels. The submarine will be built in a Philadelphia shipyard, where South Korean firms have increased investment. The approval comes after Seoul agreed to buy vast quantities of U.S. oil and gas.
Russia claimed that it had successfully tested its nuclear-powered cruise missile on Sunday. The missile reportedly traveled more than 8,700 miles in 15 hours, putting major U.S. cities within reach. Russian President Vladimir Putin calls it invincible. He claims it can evade any missile defense system, present or future. But military analysts are skeptical about its effectiveness. They point to the missile's subsonic speed and radar visibility, saying it may be more symbolic than strategic. A test back in 2019 exploded, killing seven and spiking radiation. Analysts call it a political flex as Putin worries about possible U.S. Tomahawks in Ukraine. The U.S. once abandoned its nuclear-powered missile program in the 1950s. But with President Trump ordering a return to nuclear weapons testing, America could be stepping back into an arms race with Russia and China. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov responded, saying the recent missile test doesn't qualify as a nuclear explosion test. China's Commerce Ministry confirmed on Thursday that the regime will suspend its new export control restrictions on rare earth minerals for 1 year. It also said the U.S. will pause its investigation into China's shipbuilding and maritime industries for 1 year. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said China approved the transfer agreement for TikTok, adding that he expects it to move forward in the coming weeks and months. China's Commerce Ministry said it would properly handle TikTok-related issues with the U.S. Meanwhile, more details on President Trump's Asia trip. Taiwan reportedly never came up in talks with Xi Jinping. As for North Korea, Trump said he was unable to meet with its leader Kim Jong-un due to time constraints, but he added that he's willing to return to the region for a meeting. Coming up, more questions and answers after the high-stakes Trump-Xi meeting. Former professor at Peking University's HSBC School of Business, Christopher Balding, unpacks the economic angles of the talks.
This is a placeholder agreement designed to, let's say, delay the ratcheting up of further hostilities than to actually solve anything.
And retired Brigadier General and former U.S. Defense Attaché in Beijing, David Stilwell, joins us to unpack how the U.S. and China cover the talks and what that signals to each side.
PRC have an entire curriculum on flattery. And I can't tell you how many meetings I was in as a defense attaché where the Chinese counterpart would tell my boss what a great guy Stilwell is and how he's giving us everything we want. I mean, that's cutting me off at the knees, using flattery as a tool.
More on that after the break here on China in Focus. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Following the high-stakes meeting between President Trump and Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping, reports say China has agreed to delay its rare earth export curbs by a year. So far, the agreement on both sides is verbal and no trade deal has been inked. Joining us to unpack the economic angles of this meeting is Christopher Balding. He was a professor at Peking University's HSBC School of Business until 2018, when he was fired for pushing back against censorship. Now he's the founder of Sipter, a smart social media platform, and New Kite Data Labs, a think tank focused on China, data technology, and the economy. Christopher Balding, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show.
Thank you for having me, Tiffany.
Of course, President Trump and China Xi had that high-stakes meeting in South Korea, Trump rating it 12 out of 10 for his meeting with China Xi. It seems so far, though, there's a lot covered, depending on, you know, Western media or China's coverage of this event, very different topics. But it seems like right now it's mostly verbal. There's no trade deal yet.
This seems to what I would call it mostly a placeholder agreement. You know, there were a number of things that were delayed for 1 year by both sides. So maybe there's hope that there will be a larger agreement. It seems much more, however, that this is a placeholder agreement designed to, let's say, delay the ratcheting up of further hostilities than to actually solve anything.
On the point of this one-year delay, of course, headlines are noting the on China's side, the rare earth export controls will be delayed about a year. And then, of course, on the U.S. side is tariffs. Also something about chips, NVIDIA's, you know, pretty high-end chips involved as well. But on the rare earth aspect, very quickly, we saw Trump sign a bunch of deals in Asia, one with Malaysia. But Malaysia seems to have just walked back their deal with the United States, saying instead of the raw materials, they're now only going to be sending the refined or processed minerals to the U.S., which is refined and processed by Beijing. So how are you reading all of these moving parts, if you will?
I'm trying to keep up with you know, all the moving parts that are taking place right now. You know, one of the moving parts clearly is rare earths. We saw this week that there's a certain rare earth processor coming online in the United States. There's a deal that was struck between an Australian firm and Malaysia to do processing using no Chinese intellectual property or machines of any kind. So I think one aspect of this is Trump is basically doing the Project Warp Speed, or the some have called it the Manhattan Project for rare earths, to basically, you know, break the global Chinese monopoly on rare earths as fast as possible. And part of that, you know, placeholder agreement is what I'm calling it, is when they come back, you know, maybe in 6 months or a year, they, you know, Trump will look at Xi and say, you know, sorry, you know, we're not scared of rare earths anymore. We you know, we can do that ourselves. So I suspect that that is one part of the, you know, everybody kind of puts a pause button and says, let's resume fighting in a year.
I want to dig into that, because with this one-year window that we have right now, it seems like kind of a trade truce, right, continuing delicately, if you will. Of course, the deal hasn't been signed yet, so we don't know if there's any mechanisms in place to ensure that this time China follows through. But what are you watching for in that aspect? What kind of levers would the U.S. have to maybe hold China to account this time?
One of the things that I think is going to be very interesting going forward into the future is basically the oversight of these agreements and how the United States and China react to that. Specifically, as you've noted, with the fentanyl agreement, is the United States, if they don't believe China is actively assisting and cracking down on fentanyl producers, are they going to snap back tariffs on China? To date, China, you know, every time this has come up, they've promised this time we mean it. And, you know, within 6 months, it doesn't mean anything at all. So when we're talking about how will this play out in the future, what will Trump do if China doesn't uphold? What will Trump do if China doesn't continue shipping rare earths in the interim? So when I talk about placeholder, I think that's what we're talking about. It really doesn't solve anything. It just kind of pushes a lot of those decisions off into the future.
Definitely a lot to watch for here for sure. Christopher Balding, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tiffany.
And joining us to unpack the different signals out of the U.S. and China on the Trump-Xi meeting is retired Brigadier General David Stilwell. He's a former defense attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing and former Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of East Asian and Pacific Affairs. General Stilwell, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show.
Here we are again.
Xi Jinping used the words partner and friend in his opening speech, and then he also said that Trump is making America great again. Kind of surprising given the, if you will, adversarial relationship between the two countries, especially the tensions that have been escalating. What do you make of this change in tone, if you will?
It could be one of two things. It could be many things, but my initial estimate is one. The PRC have an entire curriculum on flattery, and the fact that the President Trump uses flattery so well, some people criticize him for flattering, you know, the despots like Putin and Kim Jong-un and the rest. But if you notice, he will flatter enemy adversaries and wire brush our closest friends. There's a point to that. The PRC are masters at this, and I can't tell how many meetings I was in as a defense attaché where the Chinese counterpart would tell my boss what a great guy Stilwell is and how he's giving us everything we want. I mean, that's cutting me off at the knees, using flattery as a tool. It also softens up the person on the other side of the table. It tells the other side that it disarms you. You are reluctant to come out strong, either verbally or in actions, when someone's telling you how good you're looking you are. I didn't suffer much of that in my career. But I would just chalk it up to flattery and to hopefully representing the fact that the PRC is recognizing that they are not in a demanding position, but they need to start giving.
I want to dig into that a little bit, because if you look at different coverages of these talks, Xinhua or China mouthpiece media is talking about, you know, cracking down on illegal immigration, telecom fraud, anti-money laundering, artificial intelligence, pandemic response. U.S. media, meanwhile, covering tariffs, China's export controls on rare earths, soybeans, U.S. soybeans, fentanyl, and then also tech when it comes to especially those NVIDIA high-end chips. What do you make of these very different topics, if you will, that the two media is covering?
Both sides are trying to get their position out there. The meeting was so short, none of those things could have been covered in depth. So each side is trying to put out what's important to it. It's also signaling it to domestic audience is what we hoped to accomplish in these things. As you know, the threat or actual restriction on super magnets got most Americans' attention, because it really would crush not just, you know, civilian production, but support for military development and hardware. So I think that was more aspirational, both sides saying we hope we can get to this, but there's no agreements made, nothing. It was kind of a visual for everyone. And I think, as has been said before, our ASEAN friends would often say, use the analogy that we don't care if you guys are making love or fighting. When the two elephants are together, they end up trampling the grass, meaning ASEAN. So I know our folks in Southeast Asia are hoping for a more balanced and boring interaction.
In terms of these talks, you know, heading into them, there was some concern that, oh, some headlines at least was saying, oh, President Trump is going to fold on the Taiwan issue, like hand over Taiwan to Xi Jinping. It doesn't look like that's happened. He said Taiwan is Taiwan, which many people are seeing as dispelling that fear. What do you make of that? There's been a lot of talks about the U.S. and its strategic ambiguity, if it should become strategic clarity in terms of deterrence. What are your thoughts on all of that?
You know, we did the CHIPS Act, or we sent the Undersecretary for Economics, Keith Kroc, to Taiwan in September of 2020. He met with TSMC leadership and began hammering out the deal that resulted in TSMC setting up a foundry in Phoenix. Taiwan is not just about chips, but it is an area where they are world leading. And I think the president understands the importance of that. So again, it's hard. My advice to people who try to put too much, conclude too much from what the president says is look at what he does, not what he says. And so, you know, we're getting positive words on Taiwan. And I think that matches positive action as well. I mean, the Trump administration, Trump 1.0, extended itself on the CHIPS deal, began the legislation that turned into the CHIPS Act. And all of these things were positive for the Taiwan side.
Well, a lot at stake for sure. General Stillwell, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. We'll see you.
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For on-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you tomorrow.